Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. I am your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, Payne Insider, to talk all things NFL Week 2. What's going on, my good man?
Not too much. Interesting week. There's a lot of weird stuff.
I was going to say, some curious results to say the least. Fortunately for us, there wasn't last-second heroics down there at the Mercedes-Benz Dome as Atlanta held on for dear life, but they made us sweat a little bit for our money.
Dan Quinn, the defensive wizard there, going prevent zone defense, and Carolina went on a 96-yard drive in about less than a minute to make that thing interesting.
I don't think I could even get to my fridge as quickly as Carolina was able to slice up Atlanta's defense to give themselves a puncher's chance. And I know we'll get to it in a little bit, but a curious decision in that contest to keep Christian McCaffrey on the sidelines honestly worked in our favor. CJ Anderson caught footballs probably like I would from a jugs gun.
I'm trying to picture this, and it's making me laugh.
Hey, I mean, I don't envision
you being overly coordinated for some reason.
I was a guy catching hockey pucks, and I could use any part of my body. It wasn't always about catching my glove or using my blocker to try and knock it down. But no, I don't think if Cam Newton was firing fastballs at me, my tiny hands would allow me to catch the ball and turn upfield and run.
You don't have the Goldberg frame either, so I'm sure you were tough. It wasn't very easy stopping pucks.
Yeah, I was a little much slighter in my prime athletic days than what I am now. But a lot of things to get to as far as NFL Week 2. We'll, of course, again be joined by Dr. Chow, who provided awesome injury analysis last week. I know we got great feedback, Payne, through social media. And a friendly reminder to all of you, our loyal Bet the Board listeners, iTunes reviews, promotion, free swag, 5-star reviews. You guys helped us achieve, Payne, I believe, a record-setting Monday Night Football podcast last week, if that's correct.
That was correct. Yeah, absolutely. We had 2 games, so I'm sure that helped a little bit as well. Didn't give out anything as a best bet, but hopefully people won their movie and popcorn bet on the first half under of the Oakland game. Not sure what we'll have here for this one. You'll have to stay tuned to listen to what we say at the end about Bears and Seattle.
Yeah, we will get there shortly, but before we do, as is the Monday football tradition around here, we start with the good, the bad, and the ugly from what we saw. And Payne, I know we haven't exactly endeared ourselves to those Arrowhead faithful over the years in terms of picking on the Chiefs, talking about some of their defensive shortcomings, but you have been leading the charge for Patrick Mahomes, and through 2 games this year, he hasn't exactly disappointed. 6 touchdowns against the Pittsburgh Steelers, now 10 touchdowns, no interceptions, an NFL record through 2 games. His 6 passing touchdowns ties a franchise record set by Len Dawson back in 1964, and I don't know if there's enough positive that we can say about the second-year starting quarterback out of Texas Tech.
There's nothing bad to say through 2 weeks. It was a tough spot, too, right? He had the back-to-back road games to open the season. The one thing that I noticed was Mahomes really operated the offense efficiently this week. He got the ball out quickly. He found the right guys, and I think that's the biggest thing. There was a lot less college fluff. I watched every single snap of it, so it was pretty good to see. Found Kelsey in the middle of the field, really took advantage of the hashes and that weakness of the Pittsburgh defense. When I looked at this, nearly 60% of Mahomes' passes graded successful. They outgained Pittsburgh by 2 yards per play. I did watch the replay a little bit this morning, and he seems more comfortable in the pocket. I think that was the big question for us. He's doing a better job. He's not kind of drifting and running himself into sacks. He's not leaving the pocket too early. I think there's still some work to do in that regard. And then the one time he attempted to take a snap under center, he did fumble the ball, and it didn't hurt him this time, but it could. And that's something he just needs to get better acclimated to. You know, in Kingsbury's offense, it was all air raid. It was all pistol. It was all shotgun. So still some work to do in the pocket and under center.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out. I'm obviously not going to take anything away from Mahomes, but I wasn't sure how much I wanted to throw Mike Tomlin as defensive game plan under the bus. But we can get to that because we know he's been the whipping boy around these parts for a long, long time as it pertains to the way he fails to get his team prepared. But let's stick with the glass half full, Payne. And obviously the Falcons' red zone offense helped get us to the window. Four trips, four touchdowns. And we saw how this offense didn't skip a beat without starting running back Devonta Freeman.
Looked like Sark may have talked to someone this week.
He had some new ideas. Whoever he talked to, he should give that man a raise. I'll say that much.
was given some new ideas, it looked like. There was imagination. There was less bulk packages. And maybe that's because he didn't have Devonta Freeman, right? He couldn't just rely on talent. Matt Ryan seemed pretty focused. He used his legs a lot, two rushing touchdowns. And this was a Carolina defense when you looked at what they did last season in the red zone. They were in the top half of efficiency in that regard. For me, it was about seeing what Matt Ryan looked like, and it looked like he was back. There were serious concerns week one with his velocity. Everything was a changeup. So I know we wanted to give it another week to see what it looked like. All my guys were saying that they thought humidity played a role. That was probably the case. He looked fine in the dome. 68% of his 28 passes graded successful. The interception, too, was on Austin Hooper. It wasn't on him. And I think when you just look at the defensive injuries, Matt Ryan in that offense is going to have to really step up.
What did you make? I mean, we were texting during the game, of course. Still doesn't look to feel all that comfortable throwing the deep ball and being able to take the lid off of defenses with Julio Jones.
Certainly missed a spot there with Julio Jones. It was like an anticipation throw. He still had time in the pocket just to wait for him to come uncovered. There was a little down the field battle there. And it was like an anticipation throw rather than watching it uncover, seeing it, and then delivering. So I didn't love that. He's trying to get more air under the ball, it almost looks like. I didn't love that. But overall, it was a much better performance. There wasn't, I mean, literally on that Thursday night game, he was throwing changeups all night. It was all off speed. Watching him throw across the hashes in the field was a scary proposition. If it was probably a better secondary than Philly on the opening night, a couple of those are going to be picked off. But it looked much better. He was entrenched in this game. He took off a couple times, kept the defense honest because the ground game wasn't quite there without Freeman. But I liked overall what I saw from Matt Ryan.
Two other quarterbacks, Payne, that I thought played well, and you can obviously fill in any others that we don't get to hear. Blake Bortles, 377 yards, four touchdowns, one interception. The game looked to be slipping away from Jacksonville before he found Dede Westbrook when the game was hanging in the balance. You look at Andy Dalton and the way he performed under the bright lights on Thursday, three first-half touchdown passes to A.J. Green. Any other quarterbacks really catch your eye in the good fashion over the weekend?
Well, this is going to shock you a little bit, but I didn't watch the beginning stages of the Thursday night football game because I left the cave and had a little bit of a social life, decided to go see a movie, and yes.
Wait a second. It's a good thing I'm sitting down for this podcast because this is breaking news.
Had to change it up a little bit, decided to be a normal human. I got out for more than my 2 hours a week of seeing sunshine. But yes, didn't see a ton. Saw the second half. Obviously, Andy Dalton looked pretty competent. We talked about his primetime woes, and that seemed to be zapped just a little bit. He was very efficient. There's a lot of weapons there, at least at this stage in the season. You know, John Ross has been pretty good. You do have Eifert, and when he's healthy, he's been very good. Boyd was fantastic. And then, of course, some of the Ravens' secondary issues without Jimmy Smith. They're attacking that area. And once they started doubling AJ, everybody was left open to feast the other guys. I like Blake Bortles this week. That was, I mean, I was about to curse and I don't want to do that. That was really impressive.
That was vintage Blake Bortles at UCF carving up inferior group of five defenses.
It was better than that. I mean, he outplayed Tom Brady. It was the best game we've ever tracked for Bortles. I mean, he was efficient. They didn't hide him at all. You look at some of these numbers, 56% of his 45 pass attempts were successful. That's just a ton of pass attempts for him. And you look, they just wore out the Patriots linebackers and safeties. Every time you watch that game, and we were on the Jaguars for that game, but I was just like, what are the Patriots doing defensively? The drag route every single time, and they just couldn't stop it. But it was an all-around effort there. When you look at Jacksonville's offensive line, they had an injury they suffered early on to the left tackle, but they rebounded nicely, and Bortles wasn't sacked or hit all game.
Yeah, nice part about there. for Jacksonville on the defensive side. I know we were a little bit concerned about the status of Calais Campbell. He was, of course, out there, and Jacksonville's defense did what we expected them to do, hit Tom Brady early and often, built a comfortable lead, and was able to hang on to win that game by double digits. Last thing in the positive fashion, Payne, and this may be more about a trend in the way the game is going. We see Chris Thompson, Christian McCaffrey, and Saquon Barkley in the Sunday night game catch a high volume of passes, but what felt like for 3 to 5 yard completions. Is this what we're seeing now because some of the offensive line issues that a lot of teams in the league are faced with?
Well, it's getting the ball out quick. It's more of an extension of the run game. You see Gase doing it as well with the quick passes. And for teams that can't run, you just get it out the quick, pick up 3, 4, 5 yards on early downs. It's efficient. It takes place of the ground game. Both of those guys you mentioned, Thompson and McCaffrey, they're clearly just matchup nightmares. It's like linebackers and safeties aren't going to consistently win against those two dudes, especially if you put them in positions early on. Like on first down, if you're going to pass them, it's going to be tough going. And then last week specifically, like we just that was the one fear I had with Atlanta. Knowing McCaffrey was going to feast, Atlanta just doesn't set up schematically to stop running back passes. They rely on Deion Jones to basically be the guy to stop everything in that regard. And with him out, like it was certainly scary. I know professional bettors loved McCaffrey's over receiving props. It was like 49.5 yards.
We gave that on the podcast. We mentioned it half jokingly that hey, the best way to hedge against Atlanta is just betting McCaffrey over any which way you can.
And he caught 14 of his 15 targets. That was pretty wild for 102 yards. So he flew over the receiving yards prop there.
Yeah, it makes life easy when things happen. But with all the good in the NFL, there's obviously some bad, and we may as well start, Payne, with the Keystone State defenses. I don't know if the Steelers were worse or the Eagles. The Steelers defense surrenders 8.3 yards per play, spotting Kansas City a 21-0 lead. The Eagles, they go down to Tampa, and they allow 7.5 yards per play, and allowed the man, the myth, the mystery that is Fitzmagic to continue his miraculous two-game start.
Ooh, it was ugly, and of course I want to just take the low-hanging fruit and bash Tomlin for a little bit.
Yes, I was waiting for this. We couldn't get in the preseason. We didn't get it week one. We're getting it now.
And listen, that Steelers defense, they're lost. They're not organized. There's a lack of talent in the middle of the defense, and you know, certainly unfortunate situation with Shazier. You don't want to touch on that too much, but like you had an entire offseason to address these issues, and instead you drafted like an undersized receiver who looks a bit pudgy and a backup quarterback. And Tomlin isn't putting his players in position to succeed, never does. I mean, I love TJ Watt, but you watched virtually every snap of that game as well. There were situations where Watt was forced to cover Sammy Watkins one-on-one. I mean, like, come on.
Watkins has more than 100 yards receiving, you know something has gone sorely wrong on your defensive side.
You know, having TJ Watt try to guard him is a tough ask. You know, the tackling was horrible, and you mentioned they allowed 8.3 yards per play. That's just mind-boggling, and I think this is something we want to monitor closely, and I don't want to go too far out onto this limb, but it's going to be interesting to see how this locker room handles what's currently going on. You have the Bell holdout. There's clearly a divide there among some players. And now through 2 weeks, you don't have a W in the win column. Monday night against the Bucks is going to be vital. You drop that game, I think that locker room is going to be something you have to monitor.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those teams that's gotten by winning football games. We knew the culture hasn't always been the best. Sent you an interesting story. I know you'll take a read at some of my friends in Pittsburgh pointed out to me that finally, they're finally growing restless with Tomlin. Let's put it that way.
Oh.
In terms of what's going on. I mean, we've been calling for his head for the last couple of years, saying that they haven't lived up to their potential. But we can go on Tomlin rants all day and have plenty of fun. So let's focus on two teams, Payne, that outgained their opponents by 2 yards per play. And neither one of them was able to come away with a victory. The Vikings, of course, tying. Unfortunately, Daniel Carlson, he might have had a rougher Sunday than everybody not named Zane Gonzalez. And then you look at the Houston Texans, they somehow find a way to lose to the Tennessee Titans.
Whew. The Vikings are an interesting one. I think when you look at them, and this is why it's tough to be a winning sports bettor, right? Minnesota was outgained last week, and they won and covered. And they were outgained by like nearly a yard per play. I believe it was like 0.7 yards per play. And then you go and you outgain Green Bay by 2.1 yards per play. And you come away with a tie. And for bettors, Minnesota didn't cover the number. I liked what I saw from Minnesota, especially the defense. I think the scoreboard is a little lopsided, right? They only gave up 19 of the 29 points. And then you had, I believe, what was it, the special teams touchdown, then Cousins threw a pick that turned into three, and the defense was fantastic, holding Green Bay to three on that. I believe they were negative 5 yards on that drive that they ended up scoring 3 points on. So I do like what the Vikings are doing, and what's interesting here is they haven't lost a game yet. They're 1-0-1, and I thought that they might start a little slow. I think this Vikings team is going to be one that continues to trend upwards as the season goes on, especially if the O-line can stay healthy. But you're learning new systems offensively. A couple guys are playing dinged up defensively. So I think this Vikings team, if they start well, sky's the limit.
And spoiler alert, we will not be covering the Vikings as 17-point favorites against the Buffalo Bills later this week. If you folks should want to bet that or do what you may, you can do all your research on your own. Two last things, Payne, that jumped off to me, the bad. The Arizona Cardinals, 350 yards of offense. That's not just this week. That's so far on this young season. 3.2 yards per play against the Rams, 4.2 yards per play against the Skins. They were outscored 58-6 through two games. But I guess, you know, we put it all in perspective. I mean, the Raiders have been outscored 43-7 in the second half of their two games. So, again, plenty of low-hanging fruit on the West Coast for you.
You know, this isn't the preseason, I would say, if you're the Arizona Cardinals, that's for sure. I know they really attacked the preseason with vigor. But, you know, there's really no weapons outside. There's no threat to stretch the defenses. Teams are keying on David Johnson. And there's not as much imagination offensively from what I've seen. And, you know, Bruce Arians is the guy. It's tough for me to imagine how David Johnson only had two targets in the pass game yesterday, despite trailing the entire way. I think, obviously, the hiring of Steve Wilks is a complete 180. He's a defensive guy, polar opposite of Arians. And I don't know if the guys in the locker room are loving what they're seeing right now, especially when the results are what they are offensively. I mean, this is just, I mean, it's putrid offensively, and they're always a team that hung their hat on offense, being aggressive, and it's just the complete opposite. You mentioned the Raiders. That was a tough spot. I know the market certainly inflated Denver, and late money right before kick came on the Raiders, grabbing that 7, closed soft 6 some places just because the number was ridiculous. But it was a tough spot. We talked about this, and it looked like the old team that was playing on a short week in altitude kind of died towards the end. But I think maybe a bigger thing to touch on was the Denver Broncos offense. And there is a little battle going on there between Vance Joseph and the offensive coordinator and how they want to run things. And so early on, it was all about Vance wanting to establish the ground game and helping his defense out. He still cannot figure out that you're playing in altitude, you're playing against an old team that wasn't rested, that maybe tempo from the onset might actually be a positive thing to wear the team down. But hey, once it went to halftime and Denver woke up and said, hey, we're going to run a little tempo here, what do you know? 20 points and you come back and win the game. If you had that mindset from the beginning, this one probably isn't close.
Christ, finally got my boy Emmanuel Sanders involved. He did nothing in the first half. I'm going, all right, I've seen enough of this ground and pound. Terrell Davis isn't walking through that locker room anytime soon behind Denver Broncos caliber offensive lines. And last but not least, Payne, the ugly for what we saw week two. We get another damn tie, which apparently you drew a little bit of heat on social media. I'll let you get to that in a second. And NFL kicking woes continue to be an absolute beast. 18 missed kicks, field goals, extra points, you name it. And two kickers whose jobs are probably in jeopardy, Zane Gonzalez. Cleveland already mentioned they're bringing in kickers into camp or whatever the hell you want to practice this week. And Daniel Carlson, the rookie out of Auburn. Both of them pretty unfortunate days.
Listen, I'm all about spending my time efficiently. And if you just want to waste like 4 hours of your life, just, you know, move into a cul-de-sac, hop in your car and drive around for about 4 hours. I can't stand games ending in a tie. And listen, I'm a soccer guy, but I don't think we want to trend that way. And I get that we're trying to attract like new audiences overseas playing these London games. But Jesus Christ, like they can't end in a tie. It makes no sense. And yes, some people were like, it's been exciting football. Yeah, why don't we continue the exciting football and have a winner in these games? I don't like the mentality that everyone's going home with a ribbon here. I just crown a winner after 4 hours.
I mean, normally I'd say turn into a kicking contest, but the way Daniel Carlson was attempting to put the ball through the uprights, we might have been there for another 4.5 hours.
I enjoy this. I think this is awesome. One, it's changed some key numbers. Now, 3 and 7 are certainly important, but once they moved the point after back, 6 was like the largest riser in terms of importance for key numbers. But this is one of those things I think that's, helping the NFL just a little bit, right? Like, all of us used to just get off our couch or get out of our chair and just, like, go grab a snack as the PAT is being attempted. Now we're sitting there with, like, bated breath. We're like, we're waiting. Like, we got to see if this thing goes in because it can change the complexion of the entire game. So I like it. And the one thing is, like, everyone likes to watch, like, a car wreck. Like, you see one on the side of the roads and you just kind of drive by and you slow down a little bit and just view it. Like, this is what we're seeing with these kickers, and we're seeing pretty quickly that they're mental midgets. They miss one and just everything unfolds. It's fun to see.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have a lot of chances, I mean, as a kicker at that level when you talk about extra points and field goals. So if one goes awry, you can snowball quickly. Meanwhile, you have a kicker, one of the most accurate in league history, who apparently has been offered jobs with four different teams in Dan Bailey, seeing he's waiting for the right opportunity. Lord, oh Lord, I don't know what goes on in the special teams meetings throughout the course of the week, but that's a different discussion for a different day.
Is the right opportunity in Cleveland?
I mean, I'm not sure where the right opportunity is, but I mean, that's a team, you know, maybe he said it's a package deal. He goes, hey, you know what, Cleveland? You didn't want Dez Bryant by himself. I won't come by myself. You need to bring on the two of us.
That'd be interesting.
I don't know how much. I mean, do wide receivers like Dez hang out with kickers? I can't really see that. That's like the band nerds dating, you know, the head cheerleader. I just don't see it happening all that often.
Who knows? But that would be interesting. I would like to see Dez and more of a mess enter the Cleveland fold. Well, although we'll Callaway looks nice. There was no question about his talent. It was just all off the field stuff. So they're going to need him to step up and be a vital part of that offense and stretch the field. Because, listen, I like Jarvis Landry. I'm glad that he went and got paid. He ain't going to be that dude. Like, he ain't your number one. He struggles in the red zone because of his height. He's not a breakaway guy. He doesn't have a ton of speed. I know he likes to catch a ton of short passes, but you look at the yards after catch stuff, it's not very good. And I told you the Dolphins wouldn't struggle with him gone, and they seem to find many slot guys that are replacing him. And we saw Albert had a nice little run after catch for a touchdown in the slot against the Jets this week. So Landry can't be your number one. I'm just letting you guys know that right now.
Yeah, hat tip to Tyrod Taylor. Dropped that ball on a dime to give Cleveland what should have been the lead had Zane Gonzalez made the extra point.
You watched the play, right?
What? I did watch the play.
And Callaway's kind of just jogging at first. That's how fast that dude is.
He always had breakaway speed. I mean, at the college level, it was, you knew as soon as if he was even, he was leaving. The fact he's been able to get it to translate to the next level has been pretty impressive. So we'll see what Cleveland does, because obviously it's life without Josh Gordon now, and you have to hope that he gets well. I have to imagine there's some medical stuff that's contributed to Cleveland looking to trade him or release him, which apparently we'll know by later this afternoon.
That's Cleveland Browns for you, right? They were going to release him, and then all of a sudden I was told like eight teams inquired, and like, oh, might actually be able to get something for this guy.
That's simply amazing. If you're going to be inept, you may as well do it ineptitude the way that the Cleveland Browns do it. And Payne, I think that's the perfect way to transition to some of the look ahead numbers. And we'll touch on these games briefly. I don't think any of them really require a deep dive. Look ahead line, these numbers courtesy of the Westgate Superbook, where the Browns were 1.5-point favorites. That number, Payne, actually got out to 3.5 before you saw the market settle in at 3. It'll be Thursday Night Football. The Jets, rookie quarterback, 3 games in a very short period of time. Curious to see if Cleveland can finally get that winless monkey off their back.
Well, I think that's the biggest thing that we've seen with this move just a little bit. You know, the Browns are looking somewhat competent this year. Could have been 2-0, so I think the market's respecting that a little bit. And then the Jets certainly didn't look as good as they did on Monday Night Football against the Lions. Sam Darnold was forced to be a thrower. The Dolphins really did a good job taking away the ground game. TJ McDonald just flat out baited Sam Darnold into an interception. So a little bit of growing pains there. And one thing the Browns could do last year is stop the run. So a little bit, there's potential there for Darnold to be one-dimensional and have to beat teams. And I think that's what we're going to see moving forward once the film goes out. If you can stop the ground game for the Jets and force Darnold at least early on to be a thrower, they could struggle a little bit offensively.
Yeah, one of the lowest totals we'll see on the board, that number 39 right now at betonline.ag. Carolina Panthers and the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals, of course, off to a pretty impressive 2-0 start. Look ahead number had Carolina, a 4.5-point chalk in this particular spot. BetOnline.ag right now using Carolina -3 flat. We talked about the cluster injuries. It's why we played against Carolina. Cincinnati, I don't know if it's buy or beware or how we look at this. I'm sure we'll cover this game in much greater detail on Thursday.
Yeah, we definitely will. And you mentioned those cluster injuries up front on the offensive line for the Panthers, so you'll want to have to monitor that, especially Trey Turner at guard. Certainly the market move we're seeing this is the Panthers losing and the Bengals starting off 2-0. You will have to monitor the Mixon situation. There was a cleanup with his knee. I don't know if he's going to play in this one, but that'll certainly be one you want to monitor is the Mixon situation.
Yeah, I believe 2 weeks is what was out there. I know some of these guys have miraculous healing powers with some of the tools there, but it's a very good point.
Yeah, they did the surgery early, I was told, to attempt to have him back this week, but we'll see.
I'll say one thing. He's definitely looked like a dynamic playmaker that we expect to see last year, at least through the Bengals' first two games. Arrowhead, where Kansas City finally plays its home opener. Look-ahead number had the Chiefs a four-point favorite, hosting Jimmy Garoppolo and the San Francisco 49ers. Current number, Payne, the Chiefs, a 6.5-point favorite at betonline.ag.
Inflation, baby. The Patty Mahomes train. Now, again, he will have some success offensively here against the 49ers defense that isn't very good, and they collapsed late, blowing a 17-point lead. So Lions bettors got in the back door pretty nicely. You do have the 49ers traveling to the Midwest. Fortunately, they get it early on in the season, so the weather shouldn't be too bad. Garoppolo struggled to kind of close the game. He was fantastic for the beginning stages, the first three quarters, but there was a couple drives there late where he could have sealed the deal and didn't do it. You'll want to monitor the Goodwin situation. I know he's got a little bone bruise there. Attempted to go this week, but couldn't quite cut it. So maybe he's back. That would be a nice added dimension for the 49ers offense.
All I can say is yuck for anybody that laid the points with the 49ers. You have a 30-13 lead against a lifeless Lions side, and all of a sudden here comes Detroit motoring through the back door to lose that game 30-27.
Ooh, I like what you did there.
You see that? I mean, every now and again I get one in there. That's probably for the month. I'll pull a Costanza walk-off. and shut it all down. This game, Payne, I can't see us addressing in great detail on Thursday. Look-ahead number, Bears, 2.5-point favorites on the road against the much-maligned Arizona Cardinals. Current line at betonline.ag has the Bears -4.5. This, of course, before the Bears even play their second game. A game that we'll preview in greater detail a few short minutes from now against the Seattle Seahawks.
Similar to what we saw last week, with the Jets and 49ers. This line is certainly going to move based on this evening's results. A lot of books basically closed the shop on those games right before kickoff of the Monday Night Football game. And then you'll get a glance to see what they reopen. So it'll tell you about perception and what one game can do, 60 minutes can do, just based upon where this will reopen a little bit. Won't go into it too far because I know we're breaking down the Bears a little bit later on. But potentially... probably not a game we'll talk about on Thursday, I wouldn't think.
And a game we will definitely talk about a week from today. It's rare to get excited in this day and age about some of the games being played in prime time under the bright lights. Look-ahead number, the Steelers, a four-point favorite at Raymond James taking on the Tampa Bay Bucks. Given the Steelers' early season struggles and the Bucks' surge, you're looking at the Steelers now only a 2.5-point favorite coming in under that key number of 3.
Two teams heading in opposite directions. I mean, Tampa is flying high right now. You love what Fitzmagic is doing, and Todd Monken has been aggressive in his play calling. 4 more explosive plays through the air this past week. They are staying aggressive. And what's so crazy is they're not getting much out of the ground game. Just 40% of runs through 2 weeks grading successful. So Fitzmagic seems to be doing this on his own, which is pretty shocking. The Steelers, obviously, struggle just a little bit on the road. Obviously, they put up a ton of points offensively, but when I was watching that game, I think Big Ben left a lot out there. There probably could have been about another 2 scores, so that was a little bit concerning there. Want to see where this goes. Total is interesting, but obviously, we'll talk about this on Monday next week.
Are you injured or are you hurt?
When injuries occur in the NFL, there's only one man to turn to.
If you're hurt, you can still play. If you're injured, you can't.
Let's check in with 17-year NFL team doctor turned medical analyst, Dr. David Chow.
So are you hurt or are you injured?
This is Chow's Corner.
We've talked about all the games from week 2 and the gambling implications as well, but there's one other storyline we haven't addressed, and that's some of the injuries of some of the marquee players. And for that information, we go to a guest who was warmly received last week in his Bet the Board debut, Dr. David Chow. You can follow him on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. Encourage you to check out his website, ProFootballDoc.com. His injury podcast is outstanding. And Dr. Chow, when we look at some of the games, and we actually talked about them earlier in the show, the first one that jumps out to me, Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. We know his status was very much up for debate. They talked about it being an MCL and a bone bruise. Did what you see from number 12 on the field support the way the Packers handled this injury leading up to the kickoff?
Yeah, I think the Packers did a good job with it. And as we talked about last week, what happened in the game is exactly what we expected to happen, that Aaron Rodgers was going to be less than 100%. He was not going to be completely mobile. He was going to be exclusively in pistol or shotgun, but that he would play. And there seemed to be a lot of drama last week about play, not play, and really what he had. And quite honestly, a lot of conflicting information. There was indication, my video, that I thought he had a MCL sprain, and then Aaron Rodgers confirmed knee sprain. But then later in the week, a lot of media outlets said there's no ligament involvement at all. But the contradiction there is that, by definition, a sprain is an injury to a ligament. So, you know, information is difficult to come by sometimes with video, which is why I try and rely less on media reports and what players are saying than trying to use that as augments to what my eyes say in terms of the video. And to me, he was always going to play. And when Mike McCarthy said on Monday in early week that we don't know about Sunday and we haven't made that determination, he wasn't saying Aaron Rodgers is not ready. He was saying what every coach says: we don't figure that out on Monday. We wait till later in the week to make a decision on that. And I think that scared a lot of people. And by the way, I think he looked better, which is what I expect him to do. He's not going to be 100% for 2 to 4 weeks. But take that last, second to last offensive play in overtime, when he rolled out, evaded a rusher, and rolled out to the sideline and threw a strike 34, 35-yard gain to Jimmy Graham. That was not something he could have done last week. So I expect him to be a little better even the following week. Don't be surprised if he doesn't practice much, if at all, this week. And going forward, it should not be a season-long issue. Someone indicated it could be 2 months. I think, you know, come October, he's going to be okay. The question is it October 1st or is it October 15th or October 25th? But in October, he will become himself.
And Dr. Chow, when we look at another quarterback in injury status, I know a lot of people are wondering about Marcus Mariota. And I believe you flat out broke the news on this situation a few days ago. He's having gripping issues of the ball. So he was grounded in week two. Give us kind of a soup to nuts intel on Marcus Mariota's elbow.
Well, thank you for the positive spin that I broke the news. And I think that was my supposition. There was limited video, but whenever there's an injury, you try and put everything together. In other words, if there's a problem with your car, you don't typically, the spark plug and the brake pad don't simultaneously break. You break down. You try and figure out one thing that can cause all the symptoms. And what we were looking at with him was there was a report of a limited feeling or loss of feeling, some issues with potentially grip based on the fact that he threw two picks, and also a reported elbow injury. So what ties all that together is an ulnar nerve injury, a funny bone type issue. So I got that part right. Where I got it wrong is that I expected, the way the Titans were acting, that A, he did practice some, although limited, and they only have two quarterbacks on their roster. And the way that Coach Vrabel was speaking coyly about what was going on, I thought that that meant that, A, he was fine, because they weren't indicating any outward worry, so to speak. And typically when you get a funny bone or ulnar nerve issue, it goes one of two ways. It either gets better fairly quickly, like a stinger, in seconds, minutes, or maybe hours. But if it doesn't get better, and that was my assumption Friday, that it would get, it was better and it shouldn't be a big deal. But then come Saturday night and Sunday, there were reports from the big-time reporters, Schefter and Rappaport, about continued loss of feeling, which actually didn't bother me, because I've had a quarterback be able to play just fine with limited feeling. It's not through his entire hand. He can feel his thumb, index finger, and middle finger, which are the most important for throwing. He can't feel from an ulnar nerve his pinky finger and perhaps half his ring finger. And those are the least important areas to be able to grip a football and throw. So that's not a big deal. And I've had quarterbacks play with that issue before, with some tingling or numbness, and be fine. What got me alarmed before the game, and I wrote an article to it, and I know it seemed like I flipped, but the information changed in terms of what's going on, is that Schefter said he had continued issues with grip. If you have continued issues with grip, that is a big deal in terms of accuracy, especially as you push the ball down the field. And in pregame, I looked at Twitter reports. I wasn't able to watch the pregame warmups, but the reporters were saying he threw fairly casually, and he did not throw downfield or throw bullets or on a line. And that got me very worried. And obviously, Mariota did not start and did not play. The Titans were lucky to win, and that's good. But they may have to ride Gabbard a little bit here. Don't be surprised if that happens. Don't be surprised if they get it in case backup or make some roster move, only because typically for nerves, and I'm sorry for the long-winded answer, but typically for nerves, they either get better in seconds, minutes, or hours. But once it goes 7 days, a whole week, it doesn't miraculously get better the second week. It creeps along. This could be weeks, and I'm not trying to scare Titans fans. It's not impossible for it to be months. And I'm not saying his career over, and I'm not saying the sky is falling. After all, he was dressed as an NFL quarterback, and he was one play away from the Titans being the Titans quarterback under center or in shotgun. So it's not like it's an oh-my-God disaster. He cannot take the field. It is my belief that he would have accuracy problems going downfield or in outs or whenever he had to push the ball. And that's why Gabbert was the starter. He can still play quarterback today, is my belief. But, you know, if you have accuracy issues, that could be a big factor. So that's kind of where I am right now, barring any new news coming out. And I am reliant on new news. I'm much better when there's clear video of what someone has, knowing what the injury is and what the outcomes might be.
Our listeners are familiar with the Blaine train. Everyone loves Gabbert on this podcast. But that's pretty scary news for Titans fans. One other quarterback here we touched on last week in Carson Wentz. This morning, Schefter came out, said Wentz still needs final medical clearance, but is on track to play Week 3 against the Colts. If you were heading that decision, would you give Carson the okay to play? And if Wentz is under center come Sunday, how limited is he going to be?
Well, I'm not treating Carson, and if I were, I would not be able to talk about it. But I've said from day one. So one of the things I say, guys, is that I deal in insider knowledge, not insider information. Insider information will get you in jail by the SEC. Insider knowledge can hopefully make you a lot of money in the stock market. No offense to Michael Kendricks. So really, in the situation with Carson Wentz, the day it happened, I said, yeah, Schefter reported ACL, and obviously he's a great reporter. But by video, I think there's more than an ACL. And I postulated lateral collateral ligament injury as well. And then looking at him as he was returning from surgery and just on the sideline, the way he was in a brace and moving, I said, yeah, he's got an LCL in addition to the ACL. And he finally came out and admitted it. Given that, he's doing fantastically right now. He's moving well. And as a matter of fact, I saw some pregame warm-up video, which has been the tradition now on Twitter the last few weeks, including the preseason. He looks a lot better. And I put it on my Twitter timeline. A couple weeks ago, I broke down why he didn't look good on my podcast. And today I may talk about why he does look good and he's stepping into throw. So I do think he's improving. Would I clear him medically? I think that's a discussion. The worry here is that any ACL, first of all, he has more than an ACL. Any ACL is not as strong as it can be until, you know, literally up to 18 months, but certainly a year. But no one waits that long to return to play, so there is some modicum of risk that you need to discuss with the team and the player. But he's got an ACL and LCL. All indications are he's going to get cleared for contact. And that's a good thing, and I'm happy for him and Eagles fans. However, that is not a guarantee to play this week. you got a guy who's been out for a long period of time. Yes, he's been practicing with the team, but he hasn't taken all snaps. And his tradition is usually to take all snaps. And is there going to be an acclimation period? And how long will it take before the Eagles are comfortable starting him, assuming he is cleared today? There's three components to return to play. The medical has to clear him, and that in theory is happening today. The player has to want to play and feel like he's ready. No doubt Carson's going to say that. The third component is the team. The owner, the GM, the head coach have to sign off and say, we think he's ready. He looks ready, and we think we want to play him. And Jeffrey Lurie and others have long talked about, you know, big picture. Even Doug Peterson has talked about big picture. He came in with me. It was my first draft pick. My career is tied to him. And Doug Peterson has even said, I'm not putting him back out there unless he's 100%. Well, I think there's a little bit of coach speak there. There is no possible way medically that Carson Wentz can medically be 100% this week at week three. Quite honestly, it's probably second half of the season or next season before he's truly 100%. I'm not saying that he's not capable of playing professional football this week. It is possible for him to play. I said it from the beginning that it was, even though I was one of the early ones to say he wasn't going to play week one this preseason, I said that he could be there week one and certainly week three as primarily a pocket quarterback. There's no way that he's going to be there as his RPO 2017 self. And the reason why I say that is that A, he's medically not going to be 100%, but B, I think the Eagles are smart. They're not going to put him at risk that way and put him out on the edges and put him out in space and make him run the football. I think that's coach speak when Mike Groh, their offensive coordinator, has said, when he returns, we're going to have the whole playbook. I just don't see that happening. Either they're going to hold on to him till later in the season and truly unveil him with closer to a full playbook. If they're playing him this week, it will be a limited playbook.
Something we'll certainly have to monitor as bettors and fantasy players alike. And moving forward just a little bit, I hate to even mention anything Florida State related at this sad, sad time, but Delvin Cook, hamstring injury or cramp, and overall, how does the reconstructed knee look?
Well, the reconstructed knee looks good. I think he's coming along, but as I've said on my podcast, he's not 100% Delvin Cook yet. But, you know, 90 or 95% Dalvin Cook is pretty darn good. And I think that's where he's at. He's not 100% yet. Now, this hamstring slash cramp, you know, definitely could be indirectly related to his ACL. It's on the same side as his ACL. And often there are compensation type injuries as you come back. And it also may be related to the ACL and the fact that early season there are a lot of muscle injuries. And indeed, this is an early season injury, and with his limited work in the preseason, this is even earlier than potentially normal for him. Now, it seems like to me by video, it was a hamstring. It does seem to be mild. I get that he said it was a cramp afterwards. Sometimes, whether it's coach speak or player speak, like Fournette was saying he was maybe going to play, I think players are wired to be optimistic. I'm not calling him a liar, and maybe, you know, it felt more like a cramp, or he just wanted to put a positive spin on it. Either way, I don't think it's a huge deal, but it seemed more hamstring strain than cramp to me, although mild.
Understood. And before I pass the baton back to Todd, I know he wants to ask you about some of the Monday Night Football injuries. Let's go to the defensive side of the ball. And as a Dolphins fan who hasn't had a linebacker that can cover running backs or tight ends since Zach Thomas left, I've really kept an eye on C.J. Mosley. He's an all-world linebacker. Injured his knee on the first drive Thursday night. Baltimore team doctors are calling it a bone bruise. Is that how you saw it? And what's the timeline for a recovery for a bone bruise?
Well, a couple of unique situations there. First of all, when it happened on Twitter, as you know, I sometimes do a real-time injury analysis. When he went down, he jumped over the tight end and then landed awkwardly on the left knee. And the way it looked, I said, there is some worry, and the worst-case scenario there is going to be ACL tear. I wasn't saying for sure, but I said that's going to be the worry based on the video. That's what everyone is going to fear. A unique situation happened. Cincinnati is the only stadium in the NFL that actually has an MRI machine inside the stadium itself. A couple others have it on their stadium grounds across the parking lot and things like that. But the Bengals have one in the stadium that's actually open to the public on non-game days. And the reason for a lack of update early on in C.J. Mosley is they took him to the MRI machine because the MRI is the only way you diagnose bone bruise. You can't diagnose it on standard x-rays. But when the diagnosis came back bone bruise very specifically, Ravens fans should be jumping up and down because that really is the best case scenario. It wasn't an ACL, and the way the bone bruise happens is he landed awkwardly and the femur and the tibia compressed against each other, and that's just going to be a time thing to heal. And, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, hard to say, depends on the location and severity of the bone bruise. You see what he means to that defense because they kind of went downhill after he left the game. But it's really good news, even though he's going to miss some time.
And Dr. Chow, as Payne alluded to, the Seahawks and Bears, the final game of the Week 2 schedule, one that we'll break down in greater detail in just a few short minutes. They end up ruling out their most talented defensive player you can make the case for in Bobby Wagner. We knew about the injuries to K.J. Wright. You outlined some of the struggles that Doug Baldwin would have coming in. What do we make of Wagner's injury, knowing he played 100% of the defensive snaps last week, then suddenly has a mysterious groin ailment going into this week's game?
Well, I think it's potentially telling that he's been ruled out. There aren't any questionable games or anything like that. And I know there was some word that he or someone said maybe it was just a little cramp or something like that, but I've never heard of anyone getting ruled out for a cramp. So obviously there is something to the groin, and anytime you talk groin, you want to make sure that it's not a sports hernia. I have no idea. I never saw a video on his injury. I'm not saying he has this. But, a couple years ago when Marshawn Lynch was with the Seahawks, it was groin, and he's going to be okay. And then all of a sudden he's visiting a doctor, and I said, well, he's going to end up with sports hernia surgery, and he did. I'm not saying Wagner will end up with sports hernia surgery, but clearly it's something that needs to play out. Clearly it's significant enough that he was ruled out and not a game time decision. And so we'll just have to monitor that going forward.
He's the best in the business when it comes to all injuries related to the National Football League. Former NFL head team doctor for 17 plus years. You can get all of his outstanding content, even above and beyond the analysis he's provided for us this morning here on the Bet the Board podcast. At profootballdoc.com, you can follow him at profootballdoc. Dr. Chow, thanks again for all your help. It is definitely something that we pay attention to in the gambling world, but to have you contextualize these injuries and what their potential impact and ramifications are going forward is a massive help to gamblers everywhere.
Thanks, guys.
Payne, we couldn't have set that up any better. I don't think Dr. Chow knew it, how important it is to get a obligatory Blaine Train reference in. So he set the table for us with it.
Love the Blaine Train. Connected again. It was humming this week a little bit. Got out to a nice early start and then held on for dear life. And then our boy Deshaun Watson with the massive brain fart at the end. What was he doing?
What is he doing there? I mean, I probably should have put that in the good, the bad, and the ugly at the top of the show. But, I mean, dude's dancing around like a Keebler elf with no awareness of what's going on, game time and situation.
It's actually a perfect example as his socks were like coming halfway down. But, I mean, my feeling is if you allowed him to keep running around in the pocket, he's probably still doing it this morning. he took forever to release the ball in like. Hopkins catches the ball and he's just like just looking back in amazement, like, did that really just happen? Did this dude just run around for 19 seconds? Listen, he's a little rusty. I would certainly like him to know time and situation at this point in his career, but let's chalk it up to a little rust.
Yeah, I mean, we can chalk it up to whatever you want, but history says 0-2 teams, not exactly in a good spot to try and make a run for the postseason. I believe those numbers, depending on who you talk to, anywhere between 9 and 12%. So the Texans will have their work cut out for them. They'll, of course, play host to the New York Giants this coming weekend. But before we get to those games, we have a game taking place at Soldier Field later this evening where, Payne, it's the Chicago Bears, a 4.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game sits at 43, trending towards 43.5, and I feel the perfect place to start, given our discussion with Dr. Chow, is with the Seahawks and the injury list that continues to grow, because it's not only Bobby Wagner, it's not only KJ Wright, it's not only Doug Baldwin, who are all ruled out, DJ Fluker, Trey Flowers listed as doubtful, Deion Jordan, Bradley McDougal, Shaq Griffin, the list goes on and on and on for what Seattle's going to be faced with.
And that is why we are seeing this line tick out a little bit. Opened as low as 2.5 early, I don't know, in the week. We got out to about 3.5, and we did start to see some resistance. And then from there on, it's been all Bears a little bit. Did get to 5 overnight. And again, saw a little bit of money on Seattle. We're now looking at 4, 4.5. When I look at this, and a lot of those injuries you mentioned are on Seattle's defense, so let's kind of, you know, start there with that matchup. I would think Chicago's offense, at least early, is going to have some success, right? I mean, Matt Nagy's probably going to have a very good game plan here. I think it's vital. You get Trubisky going early, have his confidence up. I was reading some stuff yesterday, and Matt Nagy was basically accused of going too vanilla in the second half. He claims that they didn't take their foot off the gas. There was a narrative, again, that he got conservative against Green Bay. I don't think that was the case. I know we've had some questions, I think, about the younger quarterback and Mitch Trubisky learning a brand new system and not getting the full implementation of preseason reps. I think they were, I don't know, that idea was dashed early, but once the script wore off, I didn't like what I saw from Trubisky in terms of his grasp of the offense or knowing where the ball should go. So there's a lot of issues with his decision making. When I look at this game, I would think some of that's taken off his plate a little bit, just looking at Seattle's defense. And, you know, last week they gave up a ton. 4.6 yards per rush attempt against Denver. 50% of plays graded successful. I just think there's going to be a lot of Jordan Howard tonight. And when you look, KJ Wright, he's still out. Bobby Wagner, as you mentioned, he's the heart and soul of that defense. He's out. So this is a mash unit. And I'm just not sure what Seattle's defense is going to be able to do. The one glimmer of hope, I guess, for that side of the ball is Earl Thomas. He was on a limited snap count against Denver. I mean, Pete Carroll was like, I don't think he's in game shape, and we're playing at altitude. We want to limit his reps a little bit. And it's a glaring difference with Earl Thomas on the field versus him off the field. And we charted this a little bit. When Earl Thomas was on the field against Denver, 47% of plays graded successful. With him off, 70% graded successful. So maybe that's like a slight glimmer of hope for Seattle's defense.
Dude's out there making plays. I mean, if he doesn't have to go to camp and he can perform that well on a limited snap count, hat tip to him for doing things the right way and his entire training staff to get him up to speed for where he needs to be. But Payne, you mentioned Trubisky, and we know the Bears, I mean, they went out there and they were pretty proactive in terms of adding weapons, so there were no excuses. Whether it's the signing of Allen Robinson, Trey Burton, who was a forgotten man in the debut, Tariq Cohen, we know, has been there, but maybe not been featured prominently enough. Do we think any of those guys are poised to have big days if Nagy wants to spread the ball around and get all of his key pieces involved?
Yeah, you would think Trey Burton has a nice day in the seam. That's where, like, Trubisky loves to throw it. We talked about this ad nauseum. Trubisky was the number one seam thrower. Now you have two linebackers out. Seems like an ample opportunity. There will be, you know, I think, time to get him the ball in this one. I don't see Seattle's defensive line creating much pressure, so Trubisky should have the middle of the field open here. You'd think Cohen, operating on backup linebackers, should have some success as well. He seems to be implementing into that Tyreek Hill role. They didn't really show that during the preseason at all, which I thought was smart from Nagy, but they really used Cohen in some of those Tyreek Hill roles that Nagy had last year in Kansas City. So I think those two guys should have some success operating on backup linebackers for sure.
Other side of the ball, the Bears defense. I mean, how do we view this unit going forward? We saw the contributions and how disruptive Khalil Mack could be in the first half. Obviously significantly different when the Packers mounted their comeback. I mean, Kyle Fuller drops a costly pick. You look at Leonard Floyd, the talented outside linebacker from Georgia, who's almost been a forgotten man with Roquan Smith and Khalil there. I mean, how do we look at the Bears and what they can do on the defensive side to exploit a Seattle offensive line that, while supposedly improved, still allowed Russell Wilson to get sacked 6 times against the Broncos, even if some of those sacks are on Russell Wilson for holding onto the football for too long?
Yeah, I mean, I love the Chicago defense, and I know in the second half, and specifically in crunch time, they kind of folded like a tent there. But I just, you know, Khalil Mack's going to be a little bit more involved. He's going to know the defense a little bit better. Roquan Smith was on a limited snap count. Trevathan, they're giving the starting role to still. I think we'll see a little bit more of Roquan Smith, so that'll be beneficial. And when you look at this matchup, I think they would have some success against Seattle. The offensive line is a little bit of a mess, as you alluded to. And I don't want to, you know, do the comparison game, but when you look at what Oakland's semi-outdated offense did against the Broncos defense, 70% of the passes Derek Carr threw graded successful. And when you look at what Seattle was able to do against Denver's defense, it was a little bit different. Just 29% of all snaps graded successful, 36% of pass plays graded successful. So when I look at that, you hate to make the comparison, but Seattle's often struggled against a defense that we think is on the decline in Denver. A ton of explosive plays that Denver defense gave up this past week. Seattle really couldn't do that. Two big ones for sure. And now Doug Baldwin's out. So what is this going to look like? I think Vic Fangio's defense is fantastic. They're going to end this season probably one of the top 10 defenses in efficiency. So this is a tough matchup for me. And we know if you can get pressure on Seattle, which happens a lot, Russell Wilson is prone to running himself into sacks. He likes to hold on to the ball just a little bit too long. And so if you can give him that glimmer of pressure, he holds on to it a little bit long, tries to improvise too much. You get out of the realm of the offense, and he could struggle here a little bit. I know he was sacked 6 times last week. I could see something similar if you get a little pressure on him, because he does have a propensity to run himself into sacks.
Yeah, you mentioned Baldwin, so Tyler Lockett obviously going to take on a much bigger responsibility in the passing game. But last thing, Payne, on Seattle's offense, when we look at their running back situation, Carson probably their most effective runner, although Rashad Penny got plenty of carries, or I should say split the workload, 7 carries for 8 yards, but looking more like a third down back at this level. Does Seattle pose even a semblance of a running threat against this Bears defensive front?
It's tough to say. I mean, they haven't been able to run the ball for, I don't know, about a season and a half now. And that's been a real issue. It's basically Russell Wilson running for his life back there, improvising. So I know he needs to do it a lot, but they just haven't gotten any help from the ground game. You look what they did in week one, 32nd in the entire league, just 13% of runs graded successful. Only ran it 16 times, so 2 for 16 is not positive. And so you're not quite sure what you're going to get from the ground game. I don't think it would be a lot. And that's why I just kept scratching my head as this line got to 3.5. And it's like professional money is hitting Seattle a little bit. Finally, it leaked out to where I think it should be. It'll be interesting where this line goes. Now that you're at 4.5, does it come down off a secondary key number? Does it kind of drift out into no man's land there at 5, 5.5? When you look at the total, there was early money towards the under, specifically in the first half at 21.5. But once Bobby Wagner got announced out, we're seeing this tick back up just a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not sure you could pay me to have an under ticket in this particular game. You mentioned where this number ultimately closes. The Bears struggles as a favorite, well chronicled. Not exactly a team you're going to line your wallet with any more than you would be by backing the Dolphins as home favorites. So, Payne, you know, as we close the book on this, I mean, a game that should be interesting in telling us what the Bears are, and probably Seattle, too, going forward. Anything that'll get you to the window in regards to a side total, player prop, what have you?
There's not too much in this one that I love. You know, we mentioned Trey Burton a little bit. Potentially, he has some success here, rebounds from a not-so-very-good performance in week one. I was looking at his over-under receiving yards. It was like 33.5. And again, it's not anything that's going to be big. Maybe a movie and popcorn bet on Trey Burton over 33.5 receiving yards. But nothing too crazy for me on this one. One I'm just going to kind of sit out and watch, try to evaluate. We're still in the beginning stages of the season where we're going to learn a lot about these teams. We're still in the fact-gathering stages, so to speak.
That's what makes September football the time to overreact or underreact, depending on what you have going on. But I think I think we shed enough light on what we saw for NFL Week 2. Is there anything else you wanted to kind of squeeze in before we close up shop around here and tell these folks we'll see them again on Thursday morning?
No, I think that's everything. Just continue to support the podcast. Continue to help us out. Retweet it. Tell a friend. Tell a coworker. Go into iTunes. Leave that 5-star review and a nice little sentence or two. And again, every few weeks, we'll be just throwing the names into a randomizer for the folks that have left those 5-star reviews. We'll be giving out a nice little Bet the Board swag pack, which is just basically gear, a Visa gift card, and things of that nature. So every few weeks, we'll be running those. And again, the 200th episode is right around the corner, so we'll be having a nice Twitter contest for that as well. So keep your eyes peeled on the Twitter feed at Bet the Board Pod for that 200th episode contest.
Amazing that you've put up me for almost 200 episodes. It's a credit to your patience and a testament to your commitment to the craft, Payne.
My patience. Ooh, it is growing as I get up there in age.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, a softer, gentler, smarter, more sophisticated Payne Insider for all of our listeners. And while I said Thursday for the NFL, of course, you can join us on Wednesday to talk all things college football, along with Dave Mason and Dusty Dvorak, who will be along for the ride as they are every single week during the regular season. Special thanks to Dr. David Chow, who joined us today. You can follow him on Twitter at ProFootballDoc with all of that great injury intel to help your fantasy and wagering expectancy going forward. For Payne Insider, I am Todd Furman. Easy for me to say as I stumble over my words. Best of luck, Monday Night Football, Seahawks at the Bears. Hopefully we'll see you at the window.